Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former professional runner. Today's guest is professional runner for Nike, Sinclair Johnson. Sinclair is a Florida native, and she went on to run collegiately at Oklahoma State University, where she was a two-time All-American and the 2019 NCAA champion in the 1500. Sinclair has run for Nike professionally for the last 6 years. She's a three-time World Championships qualifier, and she's finished sixth place at the World Indoor Championships. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Sinclair. Sinclair, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. You're here with us from Monaco. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh yeah, of course. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, tell us what's going on in Monaco.
Yeah, I got here on Tuesday. It's Thursday now. I'm like, my days, when you travel over to Europe, I'm like, for the first few days, I'm always just kind of like, what day is it? especially when everyone back home is like so far behind. But yeah, it's been good. I've been to this meet before, so it's nice to come back, and it feels a little bit more familiar this time. And yeah, I'm excited to compete tomorrow night.
Yeah, super exciting. And it's going to be a 1K that we talked about earlier, which is kind of a different distance than you normally run. So that's going to be a really fun race.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to 1K. I haven't raced, I guess I raced at 1K like as my opener indoor season. But from then on, I've kind of raced just 1500s or miles. So I'm excited to drop down in distance and test some speed over, 1,000 meters.
Yes. And you have been just a dominant force in middle distance running for a really long time. So I want to go back to the beginning. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into running.
Yeah, so I originally played lacrosse like pretty much all throughout middle school. And I was planning to try out for the team in high school. And my mom suggested that I try out cross country in the fall since lacrosse was a spring sport. And one of those things where I feel like a lot of distance runners, like, you know, they end up figuring out that they're really good at it. And I didn't particularly like cross country as much in high school. But when it came to track season and I decided not to play lacrosse and just go full in on track, that's where I really found my love for it. And I primarily ran the 800 in high school, also the 1600, but I think my first love was the 800. And yeah, kind of from there, just like got better and better and earned a scholarship to run at Oklahoma State. And those were like the best 3 years. I loved running collegiately. Was lucky enough to, be there on a full-time scholarship. And when I won my outdoor title in 2019 was kind of when that just kind of catapulted this next step in professional running for me. Now I've run with Nike for, it's been like 6 years now, which is crazy. Wow. To think. Yeah. So, which it's been a true blessing. I really love running for Nike. I've had, a lot of ups and downs, but, overall, like it's been a fun journey.
Wow. So lacrosse was your original sport, which most people we hear from, it's like soccer, gymnastics. Right. So yeah, lacrosse, I don't know a ton about it. Did you guys do much running in your training, or how did you end up finding that you were good at running?
I feel like lacrosse is very similar to soccer. It's just kind of the balls in the air versus the ground.
Right.
but the positions, I mean, I'm not super familiar with soccer positions, but for lacrosse, like, you know, you have your defense, your midfielders, and your offense. And so, which I think is similar with soccer. I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it is. No, you're right. Absolutely.
Because you played soccer, right?
Yep, I was soccer. Okay. So I was ball on the ground.
ball on the ground. I was a midfielder. And I think, like, just naturally running back and forth across the field, like, I just had a lot of coaches come up to my parents and say like, wow, she's so fast. Or like, I just had a lot of endurance too. As a lacrosse player, like I could play the whole game as a midfielder. And so I think like maybe those are maybe the first signs of, me finding a future in running. But, it was pretty big on the East Coast. So I grew up in Florida, and we would travel a lot to like Northeast, in the summer for tournaments. And, it was really big at even in Florida, down south too. So yeah.
Wow. Yeah, the midfield position in soccer is kind of the same thing. It's like that's where I was. That's where a lot of runners are. I think it's like, I don't know, for me it was like I wasn't particularly good at offense or defense, but I was everywhere because I could run and had the endurance. So that's kind of how I found myself running.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like you can tell the people that are going to be good at running when they can just go 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 go. And I don't I'm like probably the same. Like I don't even know if I had the best ball handling skills, but I was just able to get down to the field or the goal like quicker than everyone else. And then just it was me and the goalie, and most of the time I was able to score.
That's exactly how I describe my soccer experience. So I can relate to that. And what year in high school did you start running? You said you decided not to do lacrosse and went for track. What year in high school was that for you?
So my freshman year,
Okay, so right off the bat.
right off the bat, I actually never played lacrosse in high school, which I'm always like a little bit sad about. I think if I were to go back, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say like I would do anything different because I love where I'm at now. But I think it would have been fun to play lacrosse for maybe at least a year. But yeah, I tried out for the cross country team in the fall of my freshman year, and then qualified for the state cross country meet. And so then the coaches kind of encouraged me to run track in the spring. And yeah, the rest is honestly history after
Wow.
that.
Yeah, for sure. And I would imagine like this was how it kind of was with soccer versus running. The physical demands are a lot different. Like it's a lot more strength and being able to hold your own on the field versus in running, it's a lot more of that endurance. There's certainly strength component to it. But I'm curious when it comes to fueling, did you notice a difference in, lacrosse versus running, did you have any of those thoughts growing up, or was it just something where like you fueled one way for lacrosse and kind of stuck with it when you turned into a runner?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. I think when it came to lacrosse, especially with my experience in primarily middle school, is like most of the time, we're like eating during the game or like, during halftime, we're having snacks. Like, I think maybe the energy expenditure is just higher because we're out there for, I can't even remember how long the games were. Maybe there was like 30-minute halves. So we're just out there for a lot longer. And there was never really like a nutrition component. It was like just eat snacks, just like, I mean, I think we were, just eating junk food, but there was no emphasis on like why certain food groups we should consume while we're, in a game or after or pre or anything like that. Granted, we were in middle school too. And then I think when I got to high school, I wouldn't say my first couple years, but then slowly, like when we're trying to find little ways to improve, I feel like then there became more of an emphasis on nutrition and like what types of food are good for you and what types aren't. And unfortunately, it became a little bit more of like a restrictive thing in high school. And I saw that a lot within myself, but then also like other women on the or girls on the team. And that kind of carried out through college. And it kind of took me a while to find the balance between like eating healthy, but then also like nourishing my body and making sure I was getting enough. And it's kind of a sad thing where it feels like it's very prevalent, especially in distance running, especially among girls and women, of this hyperfixation on eating really healthy, and sometimes you're kind of missing the mark on what you actually need.
Yeah, 100%. And I do feel like, I've talked about this before, where there's this crossover between the personality type of a runner, where we're kind of just that personality type that's more like obsessive, perfectionist, more likely to go down that rabbit hole. But then we also have this, like, I will do anything for performance, and just this misconception around what that actually means. So, for you kind of experimented with that a little bit, what was your family environment like with food growing up? What was your parents' relationship with food like, or what did they instill in you?
Yeah, my parents, I feel like, were really good role models in that regard. My dad cooked a lot when we were growing up, like almost every single night. And so I feel like we were always I feel like the emphasis on, like, you know, getting all the food groups and you know, eating till we're full was like a very thing that was established at our household. And like my parents, I don't know, they never like said you shouldn't eat this or shouldn't eat that. And of course they would, you know, say like, okay, well, you know, we had Chick-fil-A last night, like probably we shouldn't have Chick-fil-A, you know, again today. So I think that they did a good job of like allowing us to be kids. When I say us, like my brother and I, but then also like making sure we were building like good habits, especially since them themselves were runners, like not to the competitive level I'm at now, but they ran marathons and stuff. And so I think that they probably understood a little bit more about running than maybe I even did at that point. So yeah, I feel like my parents are really great. And my mom, luckily, my mom is in the medical world. She was a OBGYN, no longer now, but was when I was growing up. And so also, yeah, just her just being in the medical industry just obviously knows a lot more about health and wellness. And yeah, was a good advocate for me when it came to, yeah, what I put on my body.
I love how you said your parents let you be kids. I think that's so important for parents of athletes to realize is like, yes, they're athletes and yes, their sport's important, but it's also important for them to go have those little like Kool-Aid drinks with their friends or like go to ice cream, mm-hmm. whatever. Like it's important to allow athletes and young athletes especially to not see these foods as the enemy or as something to fear, but just as part of life and something that can also bring you joy.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more because I think, yeah, it's like, it's a fine balance between wanting to like build healthy habits, but then also not being so restrictive because I feel like sometimes when you go the opposite end, that's where you run into a lot of trouble.
Definitely. And you kind of started to share earlier that you had gone down that path of restriction a little bit towards the end of high school. So tell us a little bit about what that road looked like for you. How did you kind of start finding yourself doing that? And what was the motive behind that?
Yeah, I feel like it was a little in high school. I feel like it more so hit me in college. But I think just unfortunately being around other girls that were restrictive and seeing them perform really well or sometimes even like, you know, look better in their uniforms than maybe I thought I did. I think it was just so prevalent, honestly, like, which is sad, but it was so prevalent in not as much my high school. Maybe there was like one or two girls, but definitely in college that it was hard not to second guess like, oh, did I eat too much or oh, maybe I shouldn't get these French fries tonight. Or, oh no, I didn't run enough miles. Like I shouldn't have dessert tonight. So, yeah, it's a challenging thing. And I think something that I probably will always have some bit of, you know, in my mind of like that devil on my shoulder, just like kind of telling me. And, I feel like I'm a lot better at being able to realize like, okay, those aren't great thoughts and that's not going to help me perform. And, I don't find myself being restrictive, but yeah, it is something that you have to constantly work through. I think, especially if you have gone down that road before and then, yeah. And just, yeah, like I said, just being around women and, girls that are like that is always, yeah, just kind of triggering, I guess.
For sure. There's so many triggering things in this sport, especially for people mm-hmm. who have struggled in the past with that kind of restrictive eating or disordered eating. And I love that you said that's something that you still struggle with. I think that's important for young athletes to hear. Like it doesn't, that's life, right? We're human. We're yeah. always going to struggle with that kind of comparison, but it doesn't mean we have to act on it. And it doesn't mean that we have to do anything about it. And just learning how to kind of like sit with that and say like, yes, I feel triggered, but I don't have to change anything about myself, you know, or restrict my intake. I'm sure that's something that young Sinclair would have loved to hear. So yeah. Before we talk a little bit about your transition into collegiate running, do you have any kind of words of wisdom for a young high school runner who maybe is finding themselves kind of questioning their approach to fueling or body image or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the number one thing that I would say is like lighter does not mean faster. And unfortunately, most of the time it actually means getting slower because you're not, you don't have the energy to be able to keep up with the training that your body is doing. And so I feel like it's such a, I guess, counterproductive way to go about getting faster. And I think, also one thing that I would say too, is like everyone has a different mold. Like everyone's has different bodies. And if you try to mold yourself into what you think you should look like or what somebody else looks like it's just not going to work for you. And I think, I've learned a lot about that too, of just, I have a lot more muscle than probably most 1500 athletes. Like I'm a little bit more muscular than like lean. And I've tried to fight that before, but now I've realized like, this is my body. This is how I'm supposed to look. This is my natural build. And rather than fight it, then embrace it. And, you know, there's strengths that come with being more muscular. So, just trying to hone in on that, I guess, side of things is, and really like just appreciate your body for what you can do.
That's such great advice, and you're absolutely right. Every athlete is built differently, and if we're trying to measure our performance based on how we look compared to somebody else, we're never going to feel ready to race or never going to feel like we're fit enough or anything like that. So yeah, I love that advice. Just kind of embrace the body that you have and fuel the body that you have, not to try mm-hmm. to look like somebody else. It's really good advice. And it sounds like when you transitioned into collegiate running, you kind of found that struggle was maybe worse in college. So tell us a little bit about your transition into running in college. What did that look like for you going to run at the D1 level at Oklahoma State? And what was fueling like in that environment?
Yeah, it was, I loved my experience at Oklahoma State. I have like really pleasant memories from honestly my entire time there. And I think I went through how any freshman does their first year of just a lot of change and moving away from home, being away from my family, being in a whole new training program, upping my mileage, and just a lot of stress, a lot of new stressors. And although, you know, I was having fun and I really enjoyed being there, it's just natural to have like that kind of transition. And so, yeah, my freshman year definitely struggled a bit with performance and just kind of trying to figure out the balance of like training and school and social life. And then I think by like my sophomore year, I found it a lot better. And but then I think that's when I started to take running probably, well, going into my junior years, probably when I started to take running the most serious, because I was like just kind of realizing that I might have a future in this and that I want to see this through and I want to see my potential. And with that probably came this, you know, back to this restrictive of like, okay, I need to be, you know, ultra lean, ultra light in order to achieve my potential. And like it burnt me out so bad, even towards the end of my cross country season in junior year, I was like hanging on by a thread when it came to regionals and nationals, and had some very real conversations with my coach, who luckily was like a good, I feel like sometimes there's not enough coaches out there who can like call it like it is. And but then also say it in a way that is receptive. And luckily I had a coach who was like that. And, just had a very real conversation with me and saying, you know, just, you're looking really thin and I'm worried and I just want to make sure that, you know, you're eating enough and you're fueling. And I think sometimes when we were you know, in the dining hall, it was like a bit overwhelming with how much food there was. And sometimes there weren't like the healthiest choices because, you know, they're trying to fuel the football team primarily. And, you know, we're distance runners and can't eat French fries and burgers and hot dogs every single night. So I think that was really tough for a lot of us, and definitely tough for me when I was going through those eras, because sometimes I was like, I guess I'm just going to eat salad tonight because everything else is, you know, really rich or fried or whatever. But yeah, I think throughout there, I feel like in those conversations I had with my coach and Craig, my fiance, who also was a great sounding board for me. I feel like I figured out a good balance going into my spring season of track, and yeah, had my best ever season. So yeah, I think, yeah, like I said, it's all about like finding balance and making sure, like, I think I had this hyperfixation on eating healthy all the time. And like, sometimes, you know, if you're eating super, super healthy, you're probably not getting enough calories or just enough food in general. And I think I've finally, I started to figure out, like, okay, sometimes I might not have the healthiest of meal, but as long as I'm getting enough and I'm making sure that, you know, I'm fueling it, that's probably more important than, you know, getting all these nutrients from vegetables and whatever.
That's so true. And it's funny when you were talking about the dining hall, for anyone who hasn't been in athletics, like, I think people are like, oh, you guys have all these resources as athletes. I'm like, no, football has these resources that totally. We get to use. They're not really for endurance athletes. And like you said, like the dining hall, we would have like ribs and like all these things, and it'd be like the yeah. night before a long run. I'm like, I don't want ribs and baked beans and like yeah. whatever the night before my long run. Like, that doesn't feel good for me. So it is hard. It's a totally new thing to navigate. And also, I think having all that like freedom to make those choices, you know, like in high school, you come home from school and you have for dinner whatever your parents have made. And in college, you're deciding from like 8 different dinner options what you want.
Right.
And it can just be overwhelming. And I think like your thought process of like, okay, well, I'm just going to have salad. And speaking to what you said earlier about healthy, I think in our minds we're like, well, salad's a healthy choice and I'm an athlete and I should eat healthy. But healthy does not always mean fueled. They're not always the same thing. And I think that you really just highlighted that difference for you. It's like, well, yeah, if I'm eating salad, I'm getting fruits and vegetables, but I'm missing out on all these other things. So now, kind of knowing what you know now, looking back, is there anything that you feel like would have helped you navigate those situations better, or any kind of mindset shift that would have helped you in that situation?
I mean, I honestly just think like a class, or even if they brought a nutritionist or a dietitian in to our team, because unfortunately, I don't know if this was like this on your team, but when there's like one bad apple, it kind of like starts, it like ruins the rest of the group. And sometimes it's kind of like a domino effect. There starts to be more and more. And I saw that a lot on my college team. And so I feel like I just wish that there was more. And it almost seemed like sometimes too, there were some athletes who had really wrong ideas about fueling and what they thought was they're doing a good job, but they actually weren't. And so, yeah, I just feel like if we had some kind of, you know, informational session of just like how much energy expenditure we are doing on a day-to-day basis, plus we're college students, like, you know, we're walking to and from class, or we're biking to and from class, we're sitting in class all day, we're going, you know, and so all these things, it's like on top of them, we're training and we're running 60 to 80 miles a week, and how much you're asking of yourself to do, and then how much, you know, then you need to intake, I guess. And so I think if we had some kind of resource in college of that, I think that would have been really, really helpful for a lot of women on our team.
For sure. And you're so right about like, if someone is struggling, it does trickle down, especially if it's someone who's maybe an upperclassman that is fast. That's a really hard environment for an athlete mm-hmm. to come into, and especially a young runner. And, you know, this is where I'm like, we just aren't taught growing. This is why I became a dietitian. No one talked to me about nutrition until I was like 22, right? And in high school, we don't know, we're not taught about nutrition for performance. We're taught about, in health class, diabetes and heart disease and how we need to limit sodium and we need to limit fat and limit carbs, all opposite things that runners should be doing. So of course, we're going to feel confused when we get to college and we see an athlete who's doing all those things and we're like, oh yeah, of course, that's what I should be doing. Especially if they're fast. And so I don't know about you, but I feel like in that situation, kind of thinking back, like wondering how could I set a better example for my teammates? I get this question a lot from young runners who are like, I have teammates who are struggling. How can I like help them or how can I fuel myself in this environment? And for me, I think it's kind of like, don't worry about them. Like, I know it's stressful to be surrounded by that, but you can only focus on yourself. So do you have anything like to add to that or anything that you would find when you became an upperclassman that you're like, okay, this is how I'm going to do things instead of following what other people are doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're kind of right of like, don't worry about them, but I think setting a good example and being, and I think a lot of times, especially in that regard, it's probably better to lead by example than to, sometimes I think people just don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that they're not feeling enough. They don't want to hear that, you know, they're, you know, starting to lose like weight. Like, I think sometimes it's like, yeah, you want to be able to lead this example of, I look at me, I'm fuel, not look at me, like I'm the prime example, but you know, more so of like, if they are looking up to you, it's like they see you, you know, eating carbs, they see you getting dessert, they see you, you know, having a full plate of food, finishing your whole plate, and then also performing well too. So, I definitely think, yeah, I could have been a better example, especially my junior year, because I think that's when I was kind of coming into having a lot of success. And there were some upperclassmen or underclassmen that came in that year and then eventually, you know, had troubles with restrictive eating. And so I sometimes feel a little bit guilty of like, did I start that? Did I, you know, make someone think that they weren't, you know, eating right, or you know, their eating habits weren't going to be conducive to them performing well. And so I think if I could go back, I would figure out my own stuff on my own and you know, figure out why I had this kind of idea around it, and then also be able to implement better habits and healthier habits, and then just lead by example.
Yeah. And the only person you have control over is yourself. And of course, it's easy to look back and maybe feel guilt or shame and wonder if you impacted that other person. But just like you can't convince somebody who's underfueling to eat more, you're not creating that for somebody else. I think it's just, unfortunately, it's the sport. Like we said, it's just something that has been so prevalent for so long. And I'm hoping conversations like this will help people find the courage to maybe do things differently or do things their own way. And I think like your story is such an inspiration because you realize that it's never too late to change course. It's never too late to change what you're doing. And it sounds like for you, you were kind of able to, with that intervention from your coach, course correct. And you ended up winning an NCAA title your last year in college. So tell us a little bit about, from your junior year up until you won your title, what were some things you were doing differently in training with your fueling? How did your mindset shift a little bit to allow you to turn into a champion?
Yeah, I think just not being scared of eating. Like, it's like so simple, but just not being scared of feeling full of, like I said, getting dessert, of eating carbs. Like, I think for a while I was so scared of all those things. And that, which led to a lot of the restriction. And so, yeah, just kind of making that switch and thinking of like, no, this is something that, I need to perform this. I need to eat enough to, I need to fuel enough to perform. And I think I also, and I don't, I wouldn't say this happened my junior year, but over time I started to have this better mindset around, you know, all of us athletes talk about food as fuel a lot, but I've really started to think it's like food is more than fuel. It's like, you know, it's a social aspect. I love sitting over dinner with friends. I love the art of cooking. I love, you know, and so I think it's so much more to it than just like I'm eating to fuel my body. And once I've kind of embraced that and found my way through that, it's been super, super helpful. And I've lost a lot of that fear of food, and I've lost a lot of that needing to be healthy all the time. Of course, I'm making healthy habits, you know, 85 to 90% of the time, but there's a lot of room where I'm not. And I feel like that has been, yeah, just really helpful, and not being so stressed about it as well, and letting go of that hyperfixation on needing to be perfect every single time when I'm making choices on fueling. And I think that started in my junior year and was just adequately fueling myself, and I was able to train and recover better and then perform better. And that just was like, I think, a huge light bulb went off in my head of like, okay, this is what I need to do to be at my best, not what I was doing in the fall. Because ultimately I wanted to, you know, be an All-American and cross country, and that never came to fruition. And then, you know, come 6 months later, I'm fueling myself, I'm feeling better, I'm recovering better. And then I was able to win my NCAA title. So, yeah, food is important.
Yeah, for sure. And I would imagine I don't know, maybe you felt some kind of like relief at realizing like, oh, I don't have to keep this up. Like, I can do things in a more sustainable mm-hmm. way and be a better runner at the same time. Like, I'm sure that was kind of freeing to have that realization.
Totally. Yeah, very freeing. I mean, to know that this is like, food's not the enemy, actually, it's your friend, and to welcome it. And that's, yeah, I mean, that just relieves so much stress when it comes to sitting down and eating a meal.
Yeah, for sure. And I would imagine too, you mentioned your junior year, you were kind of hanging on by a thread, burning out in the sport. Do you feel like it improved your relationship with the sport and your happiness outside of the sport as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what we do is so hard. And in college, it probably wasn't as hard as it is now. I mean, it definitely wasn't, but it still was challenging enough that, you know, what we have to put ourselves through is challenging. And then add on top of that, like trying to be perfect when it comes to fueling yourself or, you know, eating healthy, it's like, that's a whole nother stressor you're putting on. And so, yeah, I just found like so much more, I think, happiness and just relief, I guess, is the best way I can describe that. When it came to training and running, when I started letting go of some of those like food fears.
Yeah, that's amazing. And winning that title, like, I know that feeling of having this big goal of becoming an All-American, because mm-hmm. I had the same experience. We just talked about this before we started recording. In cross country, Sinclair and I both finished so close to All-American in cross country. Like, you can taste it, and then it comes to track and you're like, this is my last chance. And it feels like a lot of pressure. What was it like winning the title? Tell us about your race and what was that like when you won?
Yeah, that was definitely probably still to this day, like one of the highlights of my career, mainly because it was something that I wanted. I finished like dead last in 2018 at NCAAs and was so disappointed because I felt like I could do so much better and I didn't run to my potential that weekend. And so I made it a point like at the end of that race, or I guess after the weekend happened, that I was going to come back and win this race next year. And that was kind of my goal with my coach, since we established that like August 1st when we went to, I don't know if it was that early, but whenever we went back for a cross country camp, like that was our goal for the whole season. And of course we had these little checkpoints that we wanted to hit along the way, but all roads led to NCAA Nationals in 2019. And so to have that race come to fruition, I think in the nature that, you know, it was me and Jessica Hull that year, and we were fighting down the back or the home stretch, the last 50 meters. And we end up running, I think I ran 405 and she ran 406, and it was a massive PR. I think it was the world standard at the time. It was just like so much like happened in one race. It totally flipped the script of like, oh, now I'm thinking about going pro. I'm going to relieve some of my NCAA eligibility. And I think just like anything, when you put a goal on your, put a goal out there and you set your mind to something and you really work hard for something and it comes to fruition is like just the most rewarding feeling ever. And I think really reassuring too, in the sense of you see yourself at this level and it's hard to muster up the confidence of being at that level until you've kind of achieved it. And so to kind of go through the season, and I would say I was pretty under the radar, never ran like anything crazy. I think Jessica Hull was kind of, you know, the defending champion, the one to beat, the one that was going to hopefully to win. And so I think it was a great feeling, and just one that I'll cherish forever.
Yeah, that's so special. I get goosebumps hearing stories like that. I just, it's amazing when you have a goal for so long and you put that out there and you just go all in on it and it happens. Like, there's truly no better feeling in the world. And I love that for you, that came after you improved your relationship with food and started fueling more and eating dessert. So I think for anyone who's listening, the lesson here is that less is not always more. More is more. And it allowed you to train more and race at a higher level than you ever had, than really most college runners ever had. That had to have been one of the top, fastest 1500s in the NCAA.
I think it's still the meet record right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool because we had not raced each other all outdoor. And so even during the regionals, even during the prelim of nationals, and so it was one of those moments where like, okay, this is the time. And yeah, it was really cool, really special.
Wow, that's amazing. And that really opened a lot of doors for you. You went on to run professionally for Nike. You still run for Nike. You said you've been with them for 6 years. So what was that transition into professional running like for you out of college?
Yeah, and then another new life change. I feel like I kind of went through a similar thing of how I came into college, of the first like couple years were my first year and or year, I guess 2 years, because my first year was technically COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So I signed in 2019 in the fall. And so my first full year was like a COVID year, which is very bizarre. Yeah. But then I joined Bowerman Track Club at the end of 2020. And so I guess I count that as my first full year, the 2020-2021 year. It was really challenging. I mean, that was an even bigger jump in training wise. And now I'm living on my own. I guess my boyfriend came out to meet me eventually. But when I first moved there, I was on my own. And also just now all I do is run. Like, this is my sole job. I don't have school. I don't, you know, and so and I'm in a brand new city where I really don't know anybody. I have teammates, but other than that, I don't know anybody. So yeah, it was really challenging. My first year did not go well. I think it was unfortunately just not a good training fit for me. And I think I kind of always knew that in the back of my head, but, signing with a Nike kind of and being a middle distance runner kind of gave me one of two options, and one of them was Bowerman, or I guess at the time three options since OTC was still a thing. And then my third option, I guess, would have been former Oregon Track Club, which that had been, you know, very, very bad ending in 2019 and wasn't exactly enough separation of time for me to feel confident in making that decision. I think that was always tough too, of being like, being here in this training group, but then kind of in the back of my head, I always had this voice like, this is not a good fit. This is not a good fit. So I didn't last very long. And yeah, since then I've had a couple of coaching changes, but I think each year I just learn so much about what my body can handle. And kind of going back to like the body image thing of like, you know, everyone has a different look and everyone has a different mold. It's like, it's the same with training. And I feel like I've tried to fit into this certain box of really high intensity, really high mileage. And I've just found myself broken over and over and over again. And so I think throughout the years, I've learned a lot about, you know, what I can handle and what I can't. And yeah, now I'm in a position to really hone in on exactly what I need. And my training probably looks a lot different than most women that I'm competing against in the 1500. And I think for a while, I was always like, not that I was embarrassed about it, but I always had this feeling that like, I wasn't doing enough. I wasn't running enough mileage, like whatever it was. But I feel like I've come to have so much peace with it because I'm like, well, it doesn't really matter what everyone else is doing. And if I'm trying to fit into this box of what they're doing, I'm never going to reach my potential. And so, yeah, I've really honed in on what I individually need. And I know that that's what's going to get me to my goals. And, yeah, it's been really exciting.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you shared that you've been through a lot of injuries kind of between going pro and leading up to, you know, when you made the world team in 2022, 2023. So what was that like for you navigating injuries? How do you get through those? And do you have any advice for any athletes struggling with an injury?
Yeah, I've had a fair share of injuries, which is like, it's sad, but it's also part of my story, part of my journey. And yeah, it just sometimes kind of, I feel like, you know, if I didn't have all these injuries, I don't know if I would have learned as much as I do now at this point. So I kind of look at it like that. But yeah, I think, you know, there are times in your career where you have to push the envelope because you kind of have to see where that line is. And sometimes, unfortunately, you cross that line and you get hurt or, you know, you get overtrained or you're a little burnt out. And I just have done that a lot of times in different ways, too. And so, yeah, I think just kind of gathering all of the pieces. But it's incredibly hard to navigate injury, especially at this level now. I think I handled it because I had a couple injuries in college. I handle it better in college. Just because I had so much else going on. I was in school. I wasn't really thinking that this was going to be my next step until maybe my junior year. So I didn't really put so much emphasis. But I feel like now, especially my past few injuries have been really, really tough on me. And I've gone to like really, really dark places during them. And being able to crawl out of that and pick myself back up and come back out here and compete is definitely it changes a person. to put it frankly, like I feel I'm very grateful for the times I do get when I'm healthy, probably more than I would feel like most. I mean, maybe people that have been in my shoes, but I just never really take being healthy for granted anymore. And I just feel like I am the person today in terms of like, you know, who I am because of a lot of the struggles I've went through. But yeah, I guess my biggest advice would be, I mean, I think like I was saying earlier, like sometimes you do have to push that envelope, but I think if I go back and look at the times where I feel like I'm about to have an injury, there was always something in my mind or in my gut saying like, this is too much. This is, you're doing too much. You're pushing too much. And it's taken me a while to actually trust that voice. Cause I think us as runners, we're very competitive and we want to do the most and we're always, you know, trying to train harder. And so, yeah, I think being able to trust that voice and listen to yourself when it's saying, this is too much. is really important.
Yeah, that's such great advice, like trusting your gut. And it sounds like you kind of had that gut feeling initially when you went to Bowerman and felt like it maybe wasn't a good fit. And ultimately going through all those things, like you said, you wouldn't change anything because it's led you to where you are now, which is kind of doing your own thing and you're forging your own path. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're doing now. And you're being coached by your fiance, Craig, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What's that like? Yeah, I made the change last August for kind of a number of reasons. Nike was going a different way with training groups, and it's always been something that I've wanted to do for a while now, and just kind of never really had the courage or just the right push to go on my own. And this summer, all the pieces kind of lined up where I was like, okay, this feels kind of like my natural transition to this. And it's been great. I mean, Craig, who is my fiance and now my coach, we've been together since I was a freshman in college. And so wow. He's seen me go through my college coach. He's seen me, go through Bowerman, go through Union. And so he's had a really good idea of what I respond to, what I don't. And of course, we're still learning things. And the beauty of that is that we are learning them together, and there's so much more collaboration. And I think after last year, I had a pretty injury ridden last year. I was injured almost the entire year. And so after last year, I think I just really craved this hyper individuality when it came to trainings. I felt like my coach wasn't listening to me and kind of just like, you know, fitting me into where everyone else was in the group. And understandably so, when it comes to groups, he can't individualize a program for everybody. But I can't keep getting injured, because I felt like every injury just kept knocking me down. So yeah, I'm loving it now where we're able to do what we want to do. This is something that I don't think I could have done last year with Pete, is go to Monaco this time of the year. I think he had been a little bit too scared to, it's too close to USA's, where, you know, I think the conversation is so much more now like, no, actually this is going to be good. We're going to get in really good competition. We're going to sharpen up. We're going to come back for USA's and we're going to run strong there. And so I think there's just so much more of a flip of, just everything has a positive light to it with Craig versus a negative light to it with some of my previous coaches. And I think that's so helpful. And I can, you know, if I ask him what kind of shape I'm in, I can trust that, you know, he's not bullshitting me, that he's going to tell me the truth. And yeah, and I think the best part about it is that I know for 100% certainty that he has my best interest at heart, because he loves and cares about me so much. And, you know, he wants me to succeed solely because he wants to see me succeed, and he wants to see me like fill out my dreams and my goals. And so I never have to question, his intentions, because I know that they're very pure. And it's been a fun journey to be on with him. And yeah, I think that this is going to be something that I'm going to be doing for a while, because I just enjoy it so much.
Wow, that's so special. And I love like how you highlighted that he has your best interest as a person at heart, not even just as a runner. I think that's mm-hmm. so important. And yeah, like you said, having the freedom to say like, hey, this isn't working for me, I need to try something else. I think it's so important to be able to have a coach that's a collaborative approach to running, totally. That takes a collaborative approach to running, because it is your body, it's your career, it's your race, you're the one on the line. And so knowing that you're doing the things that make you feel your best, that's half the battle. Like, you know, it might not, even if you're making a decision that's not the best one, if you believe it's the best one, that confidence takes you the rest of the way. And believing in your training like that and feeling like you have that positivity and just that encouragement all the time just sounds like a really special, unique environment, and really exciting to think what you guys will accomplish.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's been a fun journey. And just like I said, I think we're still learning things, but the beauty about it is I think even after World Indoors, I came sixth there, and I was really hoping that I was going to be in contention for a medal. And I just had a race where I just kind of felt really rough from the gun. And you know, and I come back to the call room, and the first thing he says to me is like, "This is where I messed up. Like, we went too hard here." And to be able to have a coach like take that accountability almost immediately, like, I think relieves. It just feels really good as an athlete because I think we put so much pressure on ourselves. And I'm usually the one being like, I messed up here. I did this wrong. Like, I didn't, you know, do this workout hard enough or whatever it was. Or I ran a little bit too hard here. And so to have someone else kind of take the blame and the accountability was, yeah, it's refreshing. It's really refreshing. And it's not always his fault, just like it's not always my fault. And so it's nice to have that kind of dynamic where I'm like, okay, I know that, you know, we're in this together. Like, I'm gonna make mistakes, you're gonna make mistakes, but at least we're both owning up to them, and you know, we're recognizing them, and we're gonna move forward and right those wrongs. So yeah, it's been really good.
That's awesome. And it's fun just to follow your journey together. And you've recently been posting, like, you guys are cooking a lot. And something you said earlier is that food is not just fuel, it's also an opportunity to connect with people. It's a social aspect, it's emotional. There's a lot of things to it. And it seems like you've been really getting into cooking lately. So tell us a little bit about your journey into cooking and what are some of your favorite things to make?
Yeah, I feel like I got into cooking actually in college. And I had a lot of friends in college that's how we like spent our Saturday nights, is like, we come over, we're gonna make a meal. Like, I remember we made like gnocchi from scratch one night. One of my friends comes from Indian background, and so he would make Indian curry a lot for us and the team. And so I feel like a lot of times we would do that, and I kind of started to find a lot of joy and a lot of fun in doing that. And yeah, so I think this year I've kind of wanted to highlight a little bit more behind the scenes of me. And so one of the things is, yeah, I love to cook. And so I've been doing like a couple posts of just like just fun little cooking videos. But yeah, it's just, I really love, like, I guess the kind of process of having something come together. And it's fun to try new things out, like, you know, things I've never thought about making before. But then also just be able to like share that also with Craig too, because he also is a very good cook, probably a little bit better than I am. And and so it's nice to be able to share that together. Like, we love, you know, a Tuesday night where we're just making a meal together and sitting outside and enjoying it. So I feel like when some of my favorite things to cook, I love making like pasta dishes, and usually like sauces from scratch, whether that's like vodka sauce or like a shrimp scampi. What else? Bolognese. Like, I love making sauces, I guess, is what I like doing. So I'm not really like making pasta from scratch like all the time, but yeah. And then I feel like my first cooking video, I said like, I don't cook meat around here, and I normally don't, like, most of the time, but I've been getting more into cooking meat. So I've been trying to like perfect a steak, just like grilling chicken. Like, summer for us is grill season. We just put everything on the grill, whether that's zucchini or a baked potato or a steak or a chicken skewer. So a lot of stuff on the grill in the summer, but yeah, I feel like those are some of my favorite things to make.
Yum. That sounds amazing. And I feel like people I've talked to before who've gotten into cooking have found that that's positively impacted their relationship with food. Is that something you found too?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I think being able to kind of know what I'm putting in my body, and I feel like there's that control part where I'm able to, okay, I can, you know, control exactly what this meal is, and then I know I'm putting good quality ingredients in my body.
Amazing. Wow, well, such an incredible journey. Thank you for sharing all of that with us. Do you have any just last pieces of advice or wisdom, things you've learned along the way that you want to share with anyone who's listening?
I would just say, I think like what I'm kind of learning And my biggest advice is, like, and this is going to sound really simple, but I would just say, like, really own your story, because your story is, like, it's very unique, and it's what defines you. And, you know, it doesn't, I guess it doesn't have to define who you are, but it shows, like, you know, how you've gotten where you've gotten. And I think I'm saying that because I feel like in years previous, I would always be like, oh, I'm always the injured athlete. I'm always the athlete coming back from an injury or whatnot. And, you know, I think I used to always be embarrassed about that, or used to not like that about myself. But I feel like I've done so much work to be like, no, this is just my story, and this is my journey. And it looks very different from, you know, someone else's, but that's okay, because this is, you know, this is who I am. And so, yeah, just kind of owning that, and I would say that is my biggest advice. Own your story.
Amazing. I love that. Own your story. And you have a very inspiring one. So thank you for sharing all of that with us. I'd love to wrap up with our fun rapid fire questions, if you're ready.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Let's do it.
Perfect. All right. What is your go-to pre-run snack?
Probably PB&J.
Yum. Okay. Love it. What would you pick for your last meal?
My last meal. Oof. I would say probably like a nice steak dinner. I do love steak. Steak, maybe some mashed potatoes and like a Caesar salad.
Yum. I love a good Caesar salad.
Yeah.
What's your favorite dessert?
Ice cream. Love ice cream.
Too. It's a good one. Yeah. What is your least favorite food?
Oh, probably like, oh, honestly, oysters. Oh, my okay. Craig loves oysters, and I try them every time that he gets them. I can't stand them. I don't know how people like them.
Oysters not for you. That's okay. If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
Oh my gosh. I mean, most places in Asia. I love Asian food. I've been to Thailand before. Maybe like Vietnam would be like my next place. China was not my favorite, but we went to Taiwan after, and kind of more of like a cultural melting pot of Asian cultures, but they had really good food too. So,
wow.
Yeah, honestly, any Asian food.
Yum. You're the first one to say Vietnam. I love that.
Oh, nice.
What is your go-to lazy meal?
Oh, I mean, if I'm feeling really lazy, probably like Thai takeout.
Yeah, that's a great one. And then the last question, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink?
I love, I'm loving, I guess this is a, like a summer thing, but an iced matcha latte right now.
Amazing. Matcha is hot right now.
Yeah, it is.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you if they want to keep up with you, Sinclair?
I'm on Instagram. It's my first and last name. So just all one word, Sinclair Johnson.
Awesome. Well, best of luck. It'll be when this episode comes out, it'll be like in a few hours. Good luck in your 1K in Monaco, and we'll be cheering for you this season at USA's here in a few weeks.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Sinclair, you can find her on Instagram at Sinclair Johnson. Next week will be a Q&A, so if you'd like to submit a question to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.